जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय I'm
भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is chapter 14 called The Three Modes of Material Nature, text number. Now we read some of these last time, but we didn't talk about them. So we'll read them again today. Text number 21. And we can read to the end of the chapter. So chapter 14, text 21, and we read to the end of the chapter. The page number is different in the different books. So, did everyone find it? Okay, should we read together or responsively? Here. One, three.
Arjuna vacha kailingai strin gunanetan atito bhavati prabho kimachara katham chaitans Trin gunanati vartate.
Arjuna inquired, O my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? What is his behavior and how does he transcend the modes of nature?
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Prakasham cha pravrittim cha Mohameva cha pandava Nadveshti sam pravrittani Na nivrittani kaṅkṣati Udāsīna vadāsīno Kunairyo na vichālyate Kunāvartanta ityevam Yo vatiṣṭhati nengate Samadukha sukha swastha Samaloṣṭāśma kāñcana Tulya priya priyo dhīras Tulya nindātma saṅkṣutaha Manapamanayostulyas Tulyo mitrari pakshayo Sarvarambha parityagi Kunatita sa uchyate
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal toward the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material qualities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature.
Mam chayo vyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sakunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate.
One who engages in full devotional service, unfailing in all circumstances, at once transcends the modes of material nature, and thus comes to the level of Brahman.
Brahmano hi pratishtham amritasya vyayasya cha shashvatasya cha dharmasya sukhasya ekantikasya cha.
And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness.
Om Jnanati Mirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pankum Langhyate Girim
Yakripatamaham bande Shri Kurindina Karanam Paramananda Manasaram.
So for the last several weeks now, we've been talking about the three modes of material nature, since that is the very topic of this chapter. And sorry, is this mic too loud? It's not echoing too much? A little bit is. So we've been talking about the three modes of material nature and what the different symptoms of are these different modes, who is in what mode, what qualities they display, what happens to them. Hare Krishna. Okay? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Jai Sri Ram. Okay. Thank you. And, so what qualities they display, where they go, what their different activities are. So a whole classification system Krishna is giving in this chapter based on the three modes of material nature. And just to make sure that Srinivas is up to speed, because he wasn't here last week, can you tell us what the three modes are and what their main qualities are, defining qualities?
Passion, ignorance and goodness. Ignorance is laziness.
Okay, good.
Probably it must be passion. Creativity?
Yes, creativity, part of it. But what's the creative force in this material world? In the material world? That impels creation? It starts with an L.
Lust.
Lust is the pushing force, right? The creative force. Creativity, lots of activity, hard work.
Too much endeavor.
Knowledge, happiness, peacefulness.
Thinking more about their security.
Yes, yes, self-control. So, these three modes, we've been saying that they comprise the stuff of this universe, right? Everything in this material world is made of these three modes, and therefore everything is controlled by these three modes. These three are always fighting for supremacy. The different modes are fighting each other. And sometimes goodness wins, sometimes passion wins, sometimes ignorance wins, depending on what the circumstances are, what our mood is, and so forth. And therefore, from these three different modes, they're all pervasive, and from the different modes, depending on what modes are present, there are different results, different products of those modes. So, goodness, for example, leads to happiness and satisfaction, like Srinivas was saying. Passion results very much in, greed, you see? From the mode of goodness, this is text number 17, knowledge develops, real knowledge. So the product of goodness is knowledge. The product of passion is greed. So when you have a lot of lust, you have a lot of greed. And the product of ignorance is foolishness. Foolishness and madness. So the product of each one of the three modes has its different products, different results. And we've been reading how we need to get rid of all these different modes if we actually want liberation. Liberation means the place, the point above the three modes of material nature, the transcendental position. That position is known as the condition of, the transcendental position is, we talked about this 2 weeks ago, the transcendental position, the Vasudeva state, very good. The Vasudeva position is called the position of transcendence. And does anyone by chance remember what the Vasudeva position is? What state that is? What that consists of? pure goodness. And pure goodness means goodness without the contamination of passion and ignorance. And the reason that it's transcendental, is non-material spiritual, is because anywhere in this material world, goodness is always mixed with passion and ignorance. There can be no position of pure goodness. There's some mixture in it, some contamination from passion and ignorance. When you do have pure goodness, then that's considered the position of Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness, and that's the position of Vasudeva, the Vasudeva state. Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Shabdita. That position of pure goodness is called Vasudeva. Okay, so that's the position we want to get to. Anywhere we are within the three modes of material nature, that will be the cause of suffering and it will be the cause of bondage. So we want to be transcendental. Now, one more question as a kind of summary review. Why is the mode of goodness problematic? We can understand why we want to get over passion and ignorance. Passion leads to greed, it leads to hankering, and ignorance leads to lamentation, it leads to foolishness and madness and illusion. All these are bad things. But what's wrong with the mode of goodness? It says that from the mode of goodness comes knowledge. So what's wrong with goodness? Why do we want to get... Yeah, but why do we want to transcend the three modes of material nature? Why not just the two modes of material nature?
Because in goodness, if it's not knowledge of Krishna, then it's only, you're being good, but it's you're still caught up with the material world.
Right.
So if you have Krishna, knowledge about Krishna, and so you can attain, because everything that you do will be for Krishna. And
right.
Whatever you... the knowledge that you get is regarding Krishna, so that's the...
Yes, yes, excellent. What you said in the first half is exactly what I was looking for, is that the knowledge is, as even if you're working in the mode of goodness, you're doing good things, still you're still working in the material world. And what that means is that that will still have a reaction. It will have a particular karma, which you'll still be stuck in this material world. You'll still be bondage. Right? The mode of goodness is such that it's... The mode of goodness is a nice position to be in, and Srila Prabhupada always says that devotional service must begin from the position of goodness, that a devotee must be at the platform of goodness in order to perform devotional service. That's kind of a launch pad, but it's not in itself sufficient, because the problem with the mode of goodness is, since it produces knowledge and it produces satisfaction or happiness, it can become very easy to become satisfied in that position, to not want to progress from it, to remain self-satisfied, to say, okay, I'll just stay here. Because like in passion and ignorance, you suffer. Passion leads to suffering, ultimately. It leads to greed. Greed leads to disappointment. Disappointment leads to anger. Anger leads to delusion, right? We read about this in the second chapter of Gita. So it ultimately leads to suffering. And ignorance is just suffering from beginning to end. There's no end of suffering. So someone in that position of passion and ignorance, he can see, aha, I need to improve myself. But when one comes to the point of goodness, you might lose that impetus. You might think, this is where I need to stay. I'm happy here. And you find that people who are in the mode of goodness, very generous people, very happy people, they're very culturally aware people, they like to read books and they like to attend orchestras and operas and help people and give to the poor and like that. They're very satisfied and they think this is all, this is it. And so the impetus for devotional service doesn't rise within them. One can become artificially satisfied in this material world. But that's not good enough. The mode of goodness is like a launching pad to come to the transcendental platform. But you can't forget to launch yourself. In other words, the example is given, you can go, the mode of goodness is like the airport by which to go to the spiritual world. But if you stay in the airport, you're very satisfied, aha, now here I can take any flight I like. There's so many flights going every day, there's flights going to the spiritual world. So I can take any flight. But it's nice here in the airport. And you forget to actually fly, then that's not good. That can become a problem.
So this is why even the mode of goodness is considered. Krishna says in the Gita, he says one is conditioned by the mode of goodness. Yeah? We read that.
Also, in the Gita, Krishna says goodness leads to pride.
Yes. Yes, that's another thing. When you develop a lot of knowledge and you develop, you feel very good and very clean, you feel very brahminical. This is what happened. This is the downfall of the brahmanas, actually, in the Varnashram system in ancient India. When the Brahmins fell, it was because of this pride. That you become very proud that I'm so clean, I'm so pure, I'm above the rest. Right? The Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, Shudras, they're in the modes of passion and ignorance, they're working. And I'm so, you know, I study the Shastras, and don't touch me, I'm very clean. I'm going on the altar in a few minutes. And, you know. So like that, you can develop some pride. And that pride can lead one back to the modes of passion and ignorance. Right? So, in essence, the answer of why we shouldn't try to stay in the mode of passion, mode of goodness, it's not sufficient, is because we can't really stay in the mode of goodness. Remember, it's always mixed with passion and ignorance. So when we try to stay just in goodness in the mature world, without a concept of Krishna, then we'll end up sinking back into passion and ignorance at some point or another. Right? Like Gopal is saying, we develop some pride, and pride is a sign of passion and ignorance, right? So one sinks back down. Or one...
A good example is the Brahmins and the wives and the Brahmins. The Brahmins were in goodness, and the wives and the Brahmins were in transcendental.
So that's a very nice example from a Krishna book.
You can tell the story.
Yeah. So...
And see, when you're on Gopal says, it has to be from Krishna.
Yeah. He's been reading 10th canto lately. So... this is a very good example of the Brahmanas and the wives of Brahmanas. So once Krishna, he was playing with his friends in the forest, the cowherd boys, and they all got very hungry. So Krishna told his cowherd friends, he said, nearby the Brahmanas, there's some yajic Brahmanas, some Brahmanas performing fire sacrifices, and they've got everything set up there. Why don't you go and ask them for some food for all of us? And so the cowherd boy said, okay, we'll go. And they went to the Brahmanas, and they asked them, can we please have something to eat? Now, the Brahmanas, they were of course in the mode of goodness, and they were very busy in the mode of goodness, and very pure. And they said, they looked at little kids, and they said, my God, kids coming to disturb us in the midst of this big sacrifice we're doing for the welfare of the world, and what are these kids wanting? He said, can't you see we're engaged in such, such powerful activities? Come back another time, find something else to do. We can't give you something now. And they just sent them away. They said, no, but this, we're coming on behalf of Krishna and Balaram. They have sent us here to beg alms. He said, go with your friends somewhere else. Can't you see we're engaged in serving the Supreme Lord. We're engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead here. We're feeding the Lord Himself through the medium of fire, through Agni. Agni is the mouth of the Lord. By offering oblations, we're feeding the Supreme Lord. You want us to give you some food? Go find yourself something to eat. We're feeding God. What, of course, they didn't realize is that as they were busy feeding God through the medium of the fire, where was God? He had sent someone. He was there at their doorstep begging for food, right? So what they were doing, performing sacrifices, in great pride, in the mode of goodness, the Supreme Lord Himself was coming to their door and begging for food, and they rejected Him. But the wives, what happened? Then they went to the wives, or they went back to Krishna. Yeah, so they went back to Krishna, and they were really disappointed. They say, they didn't give us anything, and we're all hungry and everything. So then Krishna suggested. He said, "Oh, it's okay. I know their type. Instead, why don't you go to the wives of the Brahmanas? They might be nicer." So then he went so they all went to the wives. And they were very, very kind. And they said, oh, Krishna is here. And they're asking, my God. And they all gathered everything they could find in the house, and they all brought it into the forest where Krishna was. And they fed all their the cowherd boys and everything. And then at some point, the Brahmanas realized, right? When did they realize? Why?
They could, the
Yeah, so they could see the transformation that took place upon seeing Krishna, and because they had knowledge, they could recognize that this was something extraordinary. And so then they were very, very repentant. They said, you know, how foolish we are. What is it? So they said, dik, dik, dik. There's that verse. It says, and dik, you know, condemned our religious sacrifices, you know. To hell with our religious sacrifices, to hell with our purity, to hell with our rituals, to hell with our great, you know, Brahman quality. You know, it's, what is all this dik in Sanskrit? To hell with it, you know, condemned, they're condemned. And they were very, very angry at themselves and said, you know, look at how foolish we are. That while we were busy supposedly performing these sacrifices, the Lord Himself came to our door and He was begging for food and we didn't recognize it. But our wives, they're so much more advanced that they saw that Krishna's there and they immediately rendered devotional service. So in fact, they are our superiors, they are our spiritual teachers. So, very nice example of how the mode of goodness is not sufficient. One has to, it becomes a platform, but one has to be able to make the jump to rendering devotional service. So their mode of goodness was very nice in that because of their mode of goodness, the Lord actually came to their door. They were pure, they were proper, they were a nice brahmanas. The Lord came to their door, right? But because they were stuck in the mode of goodness, like the Gita says here, because they were conditioned by the mode of goodness, so they couldn't transcend it. And they were stuck there. And they missed their opportunity. Whereas the wives of the brahmanas, they were simple devotees. And so they immediately took advantage of that opportunity.
Even later on they couldn't see the Lord because they were afraid of Kansa. Even then they wanted to go and see Krishna, they were scared. So they
couldn't
not see
the Lord. The brahmanas. Out of fear of Kansa. Just see. Okay, so that's why mode of goodness is also not good enough, not sufficient. We have to aim for the transcendental platform to get beyond the three modes of material nature. And now, in the verses we've read today, in these verses, Krishna gives the formula for transcending these modes. After spending most of the chapter describing and classifying the three modes of material nature, now at the end of the chapter he says, okay, I've told you what they are, I told you how they bind all of us, how they're strings attached to us, how they condition us. Now I will give you the solution, how to get out. And that solution is given by Krishna because he's directly asked by Arjun. Arjun, he asks Krishna three questions. This verse, text number 21. Kair lingai strin gunane tan atito bhavati prabhu. Prabho, kemachara katham chaitans trin gunan ativartate. He says, my dear Lord, by which symptoms is one known who is transcendental to these three modes? So, one who is beyond the three modes of nature, what are his symptoms? How do you know them? Second, what is his behavior? Kim achara? How does he behave? And third, how does he come to that position of transcendental to the three modes of nature? So three questions. Yeah? What are his symptoms? How does he behave? What are his qualities? How does he behave? And how does he get there? And Krishna, in the next few verses, he answers all three of these step by step. Okay. So let's read the purport text number 22. The translation again also. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment and delusion when they are present, or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal toward the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. So, just from the translation, can you say which question Krishna is answering here? He had three questions. Which one is he answering? what are his symptoms, right? And the second one as well, what is his behavior? So in the first half of the translation, he's answering the first question. Second half of the translation, he has renounced all material qualities, etc. Equal in honor, he's talking about behavior. And the answer to the third question is text number 26. That's the answer to the third question. So let's read the purport to 22. Arjun submitted three different questions, and the Lord answers them one after another. In these verses, Krishna first indicates that a person transcendentally situated has no envy and does not hanker for anything. When a living entity stays in this material world, embodied by the material body, it is to be understood that he is under the control of one of the three modes of material nature. When he is actually out of the body, then he is out of the clutches of the material modes of nature. But as long as he is not out of the material body, he should be neutral. He should engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord so that his identity with the material body will be automatically forgotten. When one is conscious of the material body, he acts only for sense gratification. But when one transfers the consciousness to Krishna, sense gratification automatically stops. One does not need this material body, and he does not need to accept the dictations of the material body. The qualities of the material modes in the body will act, but as the spirit soul, the self, is aloof from such activities. How does he become aloof? He does not desire to enjoy the body, nor does he desire to get out of it. Thus, transcendentally situated, the devotee becomes automatically free. He need not try to become free from the influence of the modes of material nature. The next question concerns the dealings of a transcendentally situated person. The materially situated person is affected by so-called honor and dishonor offered to the body, but the transcendentally situated person is not affected by such false honor and dishonor. He performs his duty in Krishna consciousness and does not mind whether a man honors or dishonors him. He accepts things that are favorable for his duty in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, he has no necessity of anything material, either a stone or gold. He takes everyone as his dear friend who helps him in his execution of Krishna consciousness, and he does not hate his so-called enemy. He is equally disposed and sees everything on an equal level because he knows perfectly well that he has nothing to do with material existence. Social and political issues do not affect him because he knows the situation of temporary upheavals and disturbances. He does not attempt anything for his own sake. He can attempt anything for Krishna, but for his personal self he does not attempt anything. By such behavior, one becomes actually transcendentally situated. So Krishna asks two questions. The first one, Arjuna did. What are the qualities of one who has transcended the three modes of material nature? And Srila Prabhupada is saying that the main quality of that person is that he realizes that he is not actually the doer of his activities. So we talked about this in quite some detail, I think, last time. How one realizes that actually he's not the performer of all the activities, but rather the three modes of material nature, they're performing all these activities. And we gave examples of how the three modes of material nature are actually controlling the living entity. So one very interesting thing that Srila Prabhupada is saying here in the purport, he's saying that as long as we have a material body, we will have a certain set of modes of nature that we have to live with. The reason for this is because the material body is made of the modes of nature. It's composed of the modes of nature. So earlier in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that even a man of knowledge, someone who possesses knowledge, he is forced to act according to the qualities he's acquired by the modes. He's saying, when a living entity stays in the material world, embodied by the material body, it is to be understood that he is under the control of one of the three modes of material nature. When he is actually out of the body, then he's out of the clutches of the material modes of nature. But as long as he is not out of the material body, he should be neutral. In other words, till we're stuck in a material body, till we're here in the material world, we've acquired a certain body by our past karma, we will have a certain set of modes of nature. And due to that, we will act in certain ways. We're kind of, you can say, hardwired, programmed to act in certain ways, to react in certain ways to certain situations. So, Arjun, he asked this question in Bhagavad Gita. He says, why is it that people act in certain ways, that they're forced to act in certain ways, it seems, even though they know that they're not supposed to? So Krishna there, he answers, he says it's lust, right, that impels a person. But even more subtly, or more overall, generally speaking, it's the three modes of material nature which force one. And by engaging in the process of devotional service, we can learn how to transcend these modes of nature. This is what the next verse is speaking about. That by engaging in devotional service, because devotional service is a transcendental process, we can learn how to go beyond the three modes of nature. But a certain amount of influence will always remain till we have the material body. We'll be covered in a certain way. We'll be engaged in a certain way. Even though we can try to be aloof, we can try to transcend it. A certain level of the way we react to situations. And you see that in practical life, you see that a lot. That everyone has different natures, everyone has different mentalities, different attitudes. And they react in certain ways to certain situations. And you think, why do they react? Why do they keep doing the same things over and over again? Even though they don't want to do it, even though they know they shouldn't do it. It's because the certain modes of nature are there, and that person is kind of stuck with those sets of modes. But, and this is what we talked about last time, the way out or the escape for the devotee. Most people are forced to act according to the modes of nature, and they're kind of lost in that. They're just thrown around by the waves of the material nature. But the devotee is a little different. Although he's stuck in a mature body, but still he can see that I've been given this mature body, I've been given a certain set of modes, and this is not actually me. So again, we talked about this last time also, of how the devotee is able to remove himself from any particular situation and see that I'm going through this particular situation, right? I'm reacting in a particular way. I have these qualities. And in that way, separate himself, not become caught up. He's able to, like Srila Prabhupada is saying here, when one is actually out of the body, then he is out of the clutches of the modes of nature. But as long as he is not out of the material body, he should remain neutral. Meaning, he has certain qualities and he will react in certain ways, but the devotee should try to make himself aloof from it. He shouldn't be internally affected. He should realize, this is the way the world works, this is how this person works, this is how this person works, this is how I work. And therefore, I try to remain aloof, try to remain transcendental in this situation. He should engage himself in devotional service of the Lord so that his identity with the material body will automatically be forgotten. When one is conscious for the material body, he acts only for sense gratification. But when one transfers the consciousness to Krishna, sense gratification automatically stops. The qualities of the material modes in the body will act, but as spirit soul, the self is aloof from such activities. So they will do their things. The three modes of material nature will do what they have to do. But the devotee is able to extract himself from the situation and say, aha, the three modes of material nature are acting, and I'm not acting. And this in itself is most of the solution to the problem. It's at least half the solution to the problem. It's when we realize this is how the material world is acting. This is what we
You think you know, it's the modes that are acting than me. But see, a person who is acting in ignorance obviously, you know, comes from passion and comes from goodness. I mean, he does give up those things once he realizes, right? So he is actually trying to, you know,
yes,
get free from those.
Yes. Yes. No, you can elevate your consciousness. You can transcend these modes of nature. This is the whole point of the next verse, right? Mam cha yo vyabhicharine. Krishna is saying, by engaging in pure devotional service to me, you can actually sagunan samatityaitan. You can go above the three modes of material nature. But the point only that Srila Prabhupada is making here is that to some level you still have to deal with them. Means you can become transcendental in that you can learn not to be affected by them. This is what Krishna is talking about in this verse, right? That you're not affected by happiness or by distress, by honor or by dishonor. You're not affected by these things. But the point is, you still have to deal with them, right? You still have to, mess with them, because you're kind of...
It's not like you hate yourself, God, those things.
Yes.
You still try to transcend, but it's not like, you hate those qualities because you're in this body.
Exactly. Yes, very nice. The point is, you don't hate yourself and you don't hate others. You realize everyone's under these influences, we all have to deal with them to some degree or another. So, like you find some devotees, some devotees are very, very passionate by nature. Like Hanuman Swami gives always the example of some devotee he knew who was on Sankirtan, and he's very powerful, he used to be in the army, very powerful person, like heavy guy. And he would, before going on Sankirtan, he would drink, what was it? He said,
A
huge bottle of 7-Up, and what was it?
Cauliflower.
Peanut butter, that's right. Now, that's a diet enough to kill anyone, right? And then he would say, yes, let's go out on Sankirtan, and he would do very, very powerful, distribute a lot of books, very good. He would take that kind of diet, serve the Lord with full energy like that, and then he passed away early, right? Because it's, you put your body through. But that was, some people, they're like that. They live hard, and they live intensely, and they die early. Right? Other people live slowly, live peacefully, and they live a long time. Right? So depending on different modes of nature you have, different qualities you have. So the point is, even though because he was a devotee, he was transcendental to the modes of nature. He was engaging in devotional service. He was executing the order of the spiritual master. He was serving Krishna. Therefore, he had transcended the modes of nature. But he still had to deal with them because of his particular body. So how did he engage in devotional service? He used the three modes he has acquired in the service of the Lord. So because he had a very passionate nature, intense nature, he was able to do big service for the Lord. He was able to distribute books and, he needed the energy like that. So he was able to use the mode of passion for the service of the Lord. Or someone else is able to use the mode of goodness. Someone else is like that. So everyone can use the qualities they've acquired for the service of the Lord. And in this way, transcend the modes of nature. But the point is, you don't, at some level, the modes remain. This is all that Srila Prabhupada is saying here. Oh yeah, yeah.
And these other hooligans try to.
Yeah.
I think almost trying to kill someone. This guy jumped from the window and.
Yeah, and this mind says it happened in Germany, that these Hell's Angels or something, these motorcycle gang, attacked the temple, and they literally just drove their motorcycles into the front door. And it was the middle of the night, it was completely dark, and all the devotees woke up screaming and yelling, and they started beating people up. And there was one devotee there in particular who was a black belt in karate and had been in the army, and really, powerful, heavy guy. And he was trying to practice Krishna consciousness, right? But Maharaj says he was finding this peaceful life of calm early rising was a little bit frustrating because, he's like, action, I want to do something. And, when these people came in, they said, yes, Krishna, thank you so much. This is just... And he found this big metal bar, and he was up on the balcony in the temple, and he jumped down from the balcony, screaming, like that. And Maharaj tells it very well because he knows all these moves. But he said, on his way down, two people down like that, just in the air, wham, wham, like that, left, right, two people down. Then on the ground, and then like this. And he said within 5 minutes, he had all these people just, on their heels and out the door. And that was very good devotional service, right? He had performed very protecting devotees, very good devotional service. But it was in accordance with his modes, right? He used the modes he had acquired for them. So in other words, yes, we can transcend the modes of material nature. This is our goal. This is what we want to do. But how do we transcend the modes of nature? This is the key. we don't transcend the modes of nature by artificially expecting that they stop existing or by trying to destroy them. No, that's not possible. We have a set of modes, the material body has a particular set of modes, we're surrounded by modes of material nature, right? We have certain qualities. Trying to pretend like they don't exist or trying to destroy them is a negative process that won't work. Is the impersonalist process, the process of negation. What we try to do, we say, what Krishna here recommends, he says, instead of doing that, just take the modes you have, acknowledge that you have these modes, and try to engage them as much as possible in Krishna's service. So acknowledge that they're there, and then say, how can I engage these in Krishna's service? So we find, according to our nature, we find a service that's suitable to us. Look at Hanumanji. He was, he in his prayers to Lord Ramachandra, he himself says, I have the nature and the body of a monkey. This is who I am. Yes. Of course, he's a great Vaishnava, and therefore he's transcendental to the modes. But he says, this is the particular body I've been given, it's the body of a monkey. So how can I serve you? In what way can I serve you? So you see the services he did. He burnt Lanka to the ground. When he was asked to bring the herb for Sanjeevani, for Lakshman, right? He went there and, you know, if he was some Vaidya, he was some, you know, like that, he would select it, but he couldn't figure it out, so he said, what do we do? You know, we just pick up the whole mountain, bring it there. So it's something that Hanumanji would do, right? It's something you can see the way he's serving his Lord, his Master, right? He's in that particular mood, in that service. He's not serving like Lakshman would serve, or he's not serving like Vibhishan would serve. Vibhishan would never think of, you know, just tearing up a mountain. It's just too much, like too gross, like too heavy of an activity for him. No, but Hanumanji could do it. This was his nature, right? So we can see how all the devotees, they serve the Lord very nicely according to their qualities. Of course, Hanumanji's example is not exactly like ours, because these pure devotees, they're not stuck in material bodies like we are. They're not controlled by the laws of karma. But the point being that everyone serves the Lord according to their natures, according to their propensities. And we too can identify our nature, we can understand this is my particular nature, and utilize those qualities in the service of the Lord. And when we can do that, then we transcend the modes of nature. In other words, the very modes which become the cause of our bondage in this material world, they themselves become the cause of our liberation. This is the logic of the thorn. If you've got a thorn inside you, a splinter, then the best way to take it out is using a thorn. A thorn pulls out a thorn. Or not, you know, we use a needle to pull it out. It's a thorn, it's a type of thorn. In other words, a sharp object gone inside is best pulled out by another sharp object. A poison is counteracted by poison. When you give injections for immunization, it's just a little sample of the same disease, isn't it? You just put that little sample inside and it's able to counteract. The body realizes, aha, this is a problem, and it learns how to defend itself. So the problem itself can become the solution. Within the problem, within every problem, is the solution is there, it's hidden. So in the same way, the three modes of material nature are our problem. This is why we're stuck in the material world. But they're also the solution for getting out of this material world. All we have to do is say, oh, these are the qualities I have, let's engage them in Krishna service.
So for that, the first step would be to realize the qualities you have.
Yes. Yes, and this is what Prabhupada is saying.
Where is it? Where did it go?
Anyway, that's exactly, this is the first step, is to look at yourself and say, these are the qualities I have. These are the, and then say, how can I deal with them?
They're saying these are like qualities of the person in transcendence, right? Like in the previous chapter, four verses, then he was explaining the modes, the person in knowledge, and they are kind of similar, and between distress and happiness.
In the 13th chapter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And how that was in the knowledge. So do we attribute that to the goodness, or is it the same kind of transcendence? The 20.
Basically, someone in the mode of goodness. Oh, let's see here. These are, Krishna says, these are the items of knowledge, and whatever else there is ignorance, right? Yeah, all these are 13.8. All these are declared to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. So all of these qualities are present in one who is in the mode of goodness. The qualities are characteristic of the mode of goodness. Humility, pridelessness, non-violence, philosophical search. Yes. And there are qualities of the mode of goodness, and Srila Prabhupada, he says in the purport, that therefore someone who's engaged in devotional service automatically develops these qualities. Because remember, the person who's engaged in devotional service, he's in transcendental to the three modes, which means he's pure goodness. So naturally he's going to have all of these qualities. So very similar. Actually, there's another place in the Gita also that Krishna gives a list where he says, these are the qualities of a godly person.
I think Arjuna asked, like, first few chapters he asked, how does that person look?
Yes, yes.
How does he speak?
Yes, stita pragnasya ka bhasha. Like, yeah. Yes, and Krishna says, this is the qualities of a godly person. So many places actually you find Krishna in the Gita, he goes over the same things again. He says something, and then Arjuna asks a question, and in some place even Krishna even says, I explained this to you, didn't I? it's a very natural conversation. The point is, Bhagavad Gita is a conversation, and like anyone, when you're teaching someone, right, you have to go through the same points over and over again. Sometimes the person says something, then you explain something, and then you go, but what about that? Remember we talked? Okay. And then Arjuna says, but what you're saying is confusing, because first you said this and you said this. Krishna, no, but I already made it clear that both things are equal, but this is better, like that. So it's very much a conversation in Bhagavad Gita. And some verses you find almost identically repeated also, especially the famous Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto verse. Just think of me, become my devotee, offer your homage unto me. That verse is almost identically repeated in two places, in the 9th chapter and then the 18th chapter again. Krishna says the same thing. So that's a fact Krishna repeats several times. It's a good observation.
I was just going to say that the important thing is to render some devotional service to Krishna and to follow the process, and then we can do that according to our modes. But we can't just let our modes act and call it devotional service.
Right. Yeah, no, if we follow the modes of nature, then we end up in complete illusion, you know. We just end up more stuck in this mature world. Yes. Like Gopal is saying, we have to make an endeavor to engage ourselves in devotional service. And how do we know what to engage in, what devotional service? And that's by the process laid out in the scriptures, by the spiritual master, by Krishna himself, in Bhagavad Gita.
Yes. What is taking illumination? Who does not take illumination?
Okay. So, yes. Yeah. So it's a good question. Srila Prabhupada, he's talking about this in the purport. In that line, he says he does not desire to enjoy the body, and he does not desire to get out of it. Meaning, both positive and negative reactions are considered to be in the modes of nature, are not good. Meaning, he's saying, don't be attached to the mature body, but don't also hate it. Don't be attached to something that's bad, but don't also hate that which is bad. So we don't want the opposite also. We don't want the negative approach, that we say, okay, I don't like the mode's material nature, I don't want to be attached to this material body, therefore let's get rid of the material body, let's destroy the material body. That self-denying, self-deprecating, self-pitying position is also not that of devotional service, that you hate yourself. This is what you were saying earlier. So Krishna is saying both things a devotee should not hate, illumination and delusion, right? Illumination and attachment. So naturally you shouldn't hate what is good, right? Prakasham, the Sanskrit word here is prakasham chapravit. So you don't hate what is positive, which is good, but also don't hate delusion. Don't hate what is bad, because then also you're in this loving-hating business, right? Liking and disliking, which is a product of the modes of material nature. Prabhupada is saying we must remain neutral. We must remain equal.
How does hating illuminate? I mean, how does hating something good, something that can see a real world example of? You know, so if people hate probably attachment, you know, when you
think,
no, I don't want.
No, just like
illumination is like pride or something. Is like fame, when you get fame, you don't hate. Exactly, would be an example to understand.
I'm just trying to see if Prabhupada gives an example here. You know, I don't know. The best I can say is that hating illumination means hating hating the devotional service of the Lord, or hating the qualities of the mode of goodness. That's the best I can estimate. It's just like someone who's in ignorance, or someone who's in without knowledge, right? He hates things which are of a spiritual nature, of a transcendental nature. So, for example, people dislike the chanting of the holy name, or they dislike engaging in devotional service, or they dislike Krishna consciousness. They dislike saintly association, things like that. They'd much rather go to a bar rather than go to a temple or a church. So hating illumination, hating those things which are sources of light, sources of prakasha. And you find people like that, who'd rather remain in darkness, in dark activities, rather than engage in fulfilling activities. But what exactly this is referring to, I don't know. I can't say. It's difficult for me. That's the best guess I can give. What I noticed earlier in this was, does not hate delusion. This is kind of what I was focusing on. It was kind of, you would expect that the person who's transcendental will not hate good things, like he won't hate the sources of light, prakasha. But why would he not hate delusion? Like you think he should hate what is bad, right? But Krishna, he says earlier in the Gita, if you remember, that both liking and hating are actually two sides of the same coin. They both are results of attachment. Means, if you like something a lot, it's clear, obviously, you're attached to it. But also, if you hate something a lot, you're also attached to it. Just like, if you're really angry at someone, or you really fight with someone, it's a result of attachment, right? It's because you're attached to that person or to that situation. In other words, that situation matters to you. Like suppose someone is doing something bad on the street, and you don't know that person, you don't know, you know, and it's kind of like, oh, you know, like for example, you find you encounter and you say, oh, forget it, you know, what does it matter? You know, that's their life; they can deal with it. You're not attached to the situation; it just doesn't matter. But if you react very heavily, you become angry at something, or then it means that situation matters to you, right? That person, like they say, you know, you don't ever scold someone else's child; you only scold your own child. Why? Because your own child matters to you. Right? Even that anger is a result of of attachment. You become angry because you're attached. So what Krishna is saying is that even hating something is a result of attachment. You're engrossed in that activity. You're stuck in that activity. You're involved in that situation. And therefore, you react in such a violent way. Whereas the self-realized soul is equipoised, neither becoming positively attached or negatively attached, detached. It's just like also the atheist, for example. We try to love God. The atheist hate God. So like Kamsa, he was hated Krishna. And constantly, all he could think about was Krishna and how he hated Krishna. Right? Well, the Bhagavatam says, well, sitting, he was thinking of Krishna, while standing, thinking of Krishna, while sleeping, everywhere he looked, he just see Krishna, 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 Krishna. He hated Krishna, he feared Krishna. So even that was kind of the opposite of, because of that, he received liberation. Because of his intense hatred, or Shishupala, right? Actually, Kansa is more of fear. Shishupala was the one who had hatred for the Lord. He gave 100, insults to Krishna. And Krishna gave him, he said, 100 I'll give you. And after 100, I chop your head off. But he hated Krishna from his guts, you know, he hated him so badly that he kept speaking and spewing and spewing all these insults out. And because of that, when Krishna killed him, right, he got impersonal liberation. Some opposite way, he was attached to Krishna. Krishna mattered to him. Someone else would go, Krishna, who cares, you know. But he, no, Krishna, you know, you killed him and you killed him and you're just a coward, you know. And he was meditating on all of Krishna's qualities. In order to hate someone or hate something, you have to meditate on them very deeply. You have to think of them constantly. That's the only way you can hate, right? If you hate someone, you're constantly thinking of that person. In a perverse way, in a backwards way, everything that person does matters to you because you hate them so much. You think, this person is like this, and you meditate on all their qualities. Unfortunately, it's all their bad qualities. But you meditate on all their different qualities. So you're attached, right? You're attached to that person. So hating is also a result of attachment. Yes? Yes, yes. Yes, exactly. And because one hates Pakistan's cricket team, you probably know all the players of Pakistan's cricket team, and you know every single thing they do wrong, and you know what moves they did and why they should have gotten the foul from someone else. You know everything about them, right? And sometimes you know them better than your own team. You know the person you hate, you spend more time thinking about them than you think about the person you love, you know? Because you hate them so much. And this was the condition with Shishupala and Kansa both. Shishupala because of fear and Kansa because of... Kansa because of fear and Shishupala because of hatred. They ended up spending most of the time thinking of Krishna. Still, that wasn't considered a devotional service. Because one of the requirements of devotional service is that it has to be favorably performed. It has to be anukula, yes. Yes.
So in that way, they were providing a service.
Yes. So Shishupala's case is actually unique. He was Jay, and Dantavakra was Vijay. These two, Jay and Vijay. So Shishupala, he came to really to play that role for the Lord. It was a service to the Lord. Demons in general are not like that, but Shishupala and Dantavakra, they were like that. Ravan Kumkaran and Hiranyakashipu Hiranyaksha. They were performing a service to the Lord. That's very true. And therefore they hated because they were actually devotees, and they hated the Lord more intensely than anyone else could hate them. The Lord is so transcendental that even if we want to hate him, we should hate him. You know, it's better to hate the Lord than to not have anything to do with him. Because any contact you have with the Lord is going to be positive. It's going to have a good effect. Ultimately. So it's like if you want to be a demon, you should be a really good demon, an all-out demon. really hate the Lord with all your heart, mind, and soul. hate the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul. This is what Shishupal did, Ravana did. They hated the Lord. It's the demons of today which are kind of useless. It's lukewarm, like Jesus Christ said. Not loving the Lord, not hating the Lord. I'm agnostic, I don't care. That's the worst situation. You're indifferent to the Lord. Better to hate the Lord. Yes. So the point we were coming at is that even hatred is attachment. Right? If you hate bad things, delusion, you end up meditating on hate things all the time. Right? Just like there's also the story of the man who, two people were, two brahmacharis or two sannyasis were at the bank of a river. They were going to cross the river. And there was one lady who needed to get across the river. And she was stuck, and she said, "Can you please someone carry me across the river?" So they're both kind of looking at it. And one of them said, "Okay, I'll carry you." And so he picked her up and carried her across the river. And the other one, he was shocked, and he was saying, "My God, you know, you're a brahmachari. How can you pick up a woman like that? This is horrible, you know." And like, this and that. And the whole way home, he was like going on and on. This is, you know, I can't believe this, and I'm going to report this to your authority, and this is terrible, and you know, this is, and you know, she was not only, you know, a woman, but she was a young woman, you know, and she was like very beautiful, and if she was an old woman, I could understand, but this woman, you know, and you know, the way she was dressed also wasn't so and you know, and like this, and finally the man at the end, you know, as they're getting to the place, he said, "It seems that I carried her for a few minutes, and you've been carrying her for several hours now." And the point was, he was hating her, right? His hatred of her is like negative reaction. And in that way, he was becoming more attached. He was thinking everything, you know? And that was a sign, actually, of his attachment. Whereas the other one, he was like Krishna saying, not liking and not hating. He was, okay, this is a service I have to do, this is something I have to do, it's my duty, I have to help this lady out, okay, I'll just do it. So he was able to be aloof. Yes. Yeah. That's there's I forget how the story begins.
Yeah, but that's the whole story, right? That the gopis were asked to.
Oh yeah. There's a story from Braj Mandal, the Braj Vasi, they tell the story. Yeah, Krishna's the most, the greatest brahmachari, he's the greatest, he doesn't eat anything, he's fasting always. Right. Yeah. So when Shishupal was giving, I think, his criticisms, or when was it that Bhishma Dev said? In the Rajasuya, it's like, who should be worshipped?
Then he said that Krishna should be, because he's the best Brahmachari.
He's the greatest Brahmachari. Completely self-controlled. Lord Shiva is also described like that. Srila Prabhupada gives example many times as the ideal dhira, the self-controlled person. That even when Parvati was worshipping his linga, right, still he was completely undisturbed by it. So he's very, even in the midst of the circumstance. So not being attached and not being hating either. Both attachment and loving and hating, both are flip sides of the same coin. So he doesn't hate delusion, is the point. What's the word in Sanskrit? Moham. He doesn't hate illusion.
And you ask him to try to be like
that. Huh?
You ask him to try to be like that. Maybe you will get away from these. You better try to be. Try to get those qualities and try to transcend.
He doesn't.
He doesn't try to do it.
Right, right.
And again, we don't try to develop the bliss, like you gave the automatic
thing that he wants to start. Yes, yeah, exactly. This is the last line of the first paragraph. He says, he need not try to become free from the influence of the modes of material nature. Right. The point is, by engaging positively in devotional service, the idea is that you engage your mind so much in Krishna service that then the mind does not have the opportunity to either love or hate anything material. Right? It's so engaged in loving Krishna, in serving Krishna, right, and seeing everything in relation to Krishna, that it doesn't have the opportunity to. The problem is, you see, if you're attached to something and then you artificially try to become detached, then you'll end up hating that thing. And this you find, it often happens, like the case of Durvasa Muni, my father was saying. Right? You endeavor too much detachment, and you end up becoming the other extreme. You start, becoming hateful and angry, and he's giving curses all over the place. Right? Why? Because he's not, and then on the other hand, Ambarish Maharaj, right? He was detached as well. He was as detached as Durvasa Muni, but he was much more kind and gentle because he was engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. This you often find also with brahmacharis, for example. If they're very, very strict brahmacharis, but they're not engaging in devotional service, they often become very hard and very unfriendly on the outside. Powerful brahmacharis. And they're very powerful, but they're not very nice to get along with. But someone who's engaged in devotional service, like you saw with Srila Prabhupada, such a pure and perfect sannyasi. But so anyone could very easily approach him, and he was very kind and very gentle, like that. So you have to. So this is the solution. This is the verse 26. Krishna saying, "Mam chayo vyabhichare." And this is one of actually the most famous verses in Bhagavad Gita. "Mam chayo vyabhichare na bhakti yoga na sevate sagunan samatitye brahma bhuyaya kalpate." He's saying that after the whole chapter, he's giving the punchline here. Saying after discussing all the modes of material nature and what the symptoms are and everything, the million-dollar question is, okay, how do we actually transcend these modes? We've talked all about them, we've discussed them inside and out. What's the solution? And Krishna gives it in one verse. He says, very simply, he says, bhakti yogena sevate. Engage, do service in devotional service. Bhakti and seva. And he's saying, engage in my devotional service, sa gunan samatityaitan. And you'll very easily cross beyond these three modes of nature. You'll transcend them and come to the point of Brahman, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, this point of equilibrium, of being not affected, transcendent, by engaging in this devotional service. So you find this at the end, in every chapter in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna talks about a particular issue, he talks about a particular idea, and discusses it in detail, all the different angles. And in the end, he always ends up saying, so, to summarize everything, if you engage in my devotional service, you become my devotee, everything is nice. Like he discusses Dhyana Yoga, detail Dhyana Yoga, how to sit like this, meditate like this, and to align your nose and neck and like that, eyes half closed and stare at the tip of the nose, celibacy and everything. And then, at the end of that chapter, he says, but yoginam api sarvesham madgatenantaratmana shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamo. But of all the yogis, yeah, you can do all this nose staring and everything, but the one who is most intimately united to me, yoga, is the one who is my devotee, engages in devotional service. In the chapter on jnana yoga also, he says, he describes all the process of jnana and getting knowledge and everything. And then after the end of the chapter, what does he say? Bahunam janmanamante jnanavan mam prapadyante vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sutarlava. That after getting so much knowledge for birth after birth, you can do this process all you like, but in the end, where do you come? Bahunam janmanamante jnanavan mam prapadyante. Jnanavan, when you become full of knowledge after many, many births, then mam prapadyante, you surrender unto me. You come to me. Every chapter, you see, at the end of the 11th chapter, he shows the universal form. He shows everything, and he says, not by knowledge can you see this, not by yoga, not by performing penances, not by this, not by... You can only see it by rendering devotional service to me. And you can do this as an exercise. I did it once. It's very nice. Go through every chapter, and at the end of every chapter, you'll find the same message Krishna is giving. Ninth chapter is so obvious. The whole chapter is about this. 12th chapter, the whole chapter is about this. And then finally, at the end of Bhagavad Gita, just in case you missed it in every chapter, Krishna says, okay, now I've said everything I have to say. This is the end. You can do whatever you like. Yathechasi tathakuru. But before you do what you like, let me tell you once more, in case you missed it, what my final instruction is. He actually says that. He tells him, do what you like. He concludes his instruction of the Gita. But then Krishna says, maybe I should repeat it once or more, just in case someone missed it. And then he pulls a verse out of which chapter? He says, let me summarize, let me give you the conclusion. And he literally repeats himself. He pulls a verse out from the Bhagavad Gita, what he's already said. Which chapter? Ninth chapter. Why? What's the ninth chapter called? The most confidential knowledge. So in the ninth chapter, he's already said, what I'm giving to you now, guhyatamam, it's the most secret. There's nothing more secret than that. So he's given already the best knowledge in the ninth chapter. So when he wants to say, now I'll give you my supreme instruction once more, guhyatamam bhuya, once again, then where will he pull out from? It's only logical. He's going to pull out from the ninth chapter. Because Krishna doesn't contradict himself. Right? He's already told us that the ninth chapter is the best. Is the highest knowledge. So once he wants to repeat his highest instruction, he pulls it out again from the ninth chapter. And he says, Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane prayosi me. Just think of me, become my devotee, offer your homage unto me. Just think of me, Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Pratijane prayosime. And then the two verses he gives as his conclusion. This one and then the last one. Sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja am dvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyam. Surrender unto me. He said all of this in the Gita previously. Yes. What is it? What verse is that? Satyam. Mam evaishyasi satyam te prati. I tell you this in truth. Yes. He emphasizes it. So he's doing the same thing at the end of this chapter. He's giving us the conclusion. And he's saying, this is it. This is the solution. Means he's describing the problem in many different ways. He's describing the path to the solution in many different ways. But in the end, the solution is always the same in every chapter. So different people catch on to it different ways. Some people say, oh, modes of nature, this is my subject, this is what I like. Okay, I'll study this. Now what's the solution? Devotional service, okay, I'll do this. Some people say, no, I like to meditate. This is my thing, I'm going to meditate. Okay, what do I do? Devotional service. Oh, okay, that's very good. Somebody says, no, I like to read books. I'm gonna reach God by reading. This is the way to do it. Krishna says, okay, read the sixth chapter. Reading books, this is your process. See, this is best. What do I do now? Devotional service. Okay. And everyone comes there. Krishna's trying to get everyone. All paths lead to Rome. And what's Rome? Devotional service to the Lord. That's Rome. Nay, it's in fact, it's even emphasizing the same point more. Krishna says that one who engages in my devotional service, mam cha yovya vicharine bhakti yogane sevayate, he transcends the modes of nature, sagunan samatityaitan, right? And brahma bhuyaya kalpate, he comes to the position of Brahman, comes to the transcendental position, the position of Brahman. Now, just in case someone wonders, aha, so this comes to the point of Brahman. This Brahman, what is this Brahman? This Brahman must be something, this must be the Supreme. This must be something beyond Krishna. You know, like some commentators on the Gita say, this must be the soul within Krishna. It must be the person behind Krishna. It must be the nirguna above the saguna. This must be the impersonal above the person. Krishna said, no. In case you're wondering what this Brahman is, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. I'm the basis of this Brahman. So in case there's any doubt, where are you coming to? You engage in my devotional service, you reach the platform of Brahman. But in case you think this platform of Brahman is something else, you're just coming to me. Ultimately, you have to get to me because I'm the basis of this Brahman. I am its basis. So the last line of the 26 connects exactly with the first line of 27. He's saying, you come to the point of Brahman. What is this point of Brahman? It's based on me, he says. I am the basis of Brahman. Okay, so I think we, I don't know, we could, I guess we covered the chapter. The purport to verse 27 is very nice, and I don't know, if we like, we can read it next time. It goes all about the today we're done. But I'm just wondering whether we want to move to the next chapter. Maybe we move to the next chapter next week. I would recommend if you read the purport to 27. Prabhupada gives a complete overview of our theology, basically, our philosophy. The different realizations of Godhead, performing devotional service. It's a very nice purport. So we can read it. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 14th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of the three modes in the material nature. Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Samaveda Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Tai Gautamana ki jai.
So,